videotape number 34, track B. How responsive are vendors to security problems when they aren't being pressured by someone threatening to go public?
Dom? I guess the first thing I should do is, we're going to be talking about vulnerability disclosure, which we'll get into in a few minutes. The first thing I should do is introduce the people I brought with me. They've got a lot of insight into this area, and they're going to add a lot to the talk and hopefully participate so I don't have to talk at you for the next hour. I know it gets boring. On my right, I have Al Huger. Al is one of the founders of Secure Networks, Inc., which was later bought by Network Associates. And while he was there, he released over 30 advisories on variety of vulnerabilities and was very active in working with vendors to fix these problems. And all the way down, I have Elias Levy, who is the moderator of BugTrack, which is the list out there these days for full disclosure, which we'll describe and talk about a little bit later. These two guys are going to be offering some of the real-world experiences, as well as talking about things that they think I'm missing and that I need to touch upon. If anybody has any questions, we'd appreciate it if you wait to the end. We're kind of a little long on the slides. I've got about 54 slides, which is about 25 too many. So we're going to be speeding through some stuff. Hold your questions, and we'll answer them. We'll stick around as long as it takes. And again, we've got three people up here. So whoever you want to ask a question of, feel free. Okay, go ahead, Dom. First slide. The rough outline of our talk is we're going to be talking about vulnerability disclosure like we've talked about. We're going to define it, figure out who's involved in doing it, what they do exactly, what are the problems associated with each of these different mechanisms. Everything works to some degree. Where don't they work? That's the real question. We're going to go into full disclosure, which is sort of the thrust of our talk. What works about it? And what doesn't work about it? Because there's definitely opinions on both sides of the fence. We're also going to go through some case studies and look at how different vulnerabilities have progressed through each of these mechanisms, through vendors, through security vendors, full disclosure, and through the response teams. Then we'll determine what we've learned and what the message we should be taking away from this, and hopefully give you some insight on what you can do to better your security using whatever mechanism it is we decided is the best one coming out of this. Okay, Dom. Okay, our goal is to figure out what the state of vulnerability reporting and disclosure is, determine pros and cons, we've already gone over this, determine what works and what doesn't, and figure out how to use this knowledge. Go ahead. Okay, what is a vulnerability and what is vulnerability disclosure? We sort of got together and we talked, and we determined a vulnerability is any sort of bug, be it a design error or poor programming, that allows someone to use the program to do unintended and unwanted things with security implications. You know, obviously there are bugs and there are features that exist in products that allow you to do additional things with them. That's not a vulnerability, that's a feature, again. These are the problems that allow information disclosure or machine compromise or any variety of different security problems. Disclosure is the mechanism whereby the vulnerability is made public. This is how you, the public, finds out about a vulnerability. If I go home and find something in Solaris, how am I going to convey it to the public, and how are they going to be notified it exists? Oh, thank you, Dom. Who are the players? We're going to be going through each of these and describing what they do and what their role is. We've got software vendors. If you can go to the next one. Software vendors design and develop software, and they sell it to you, and you buy it, and you install it on your system. It covers just about everything that you could possibly buy: operating systems, word processors, networking utilities, even down to physical hardware like routers. What they think of security vulnerabilities. They don't like them. They don't want them to exist. As far as they're concerned, when they put a piece of software out there, it's perfect. It's the state of the art, and they've done their work on it, and they really believe they're putting out the best thing. Well, we like to think they believe they're putting out what's best and what's the most perfect software they can put out there is. They don't want you to find security vulnerabilities. And when they do, when you do, they don't want them to be publicized, mostly because it's a negative publicity. And anytime you get something like that, it's going to affect sales. There's been some recent examples we'll go over where vendors really have gotten hit hard by being exposed to these vulnerabilities. When they do find a vulnerability and they are notified of one, they want to quietly fix it. and potentially sneak it out in a patch or any variety of other mechanisms they have to covertly disclose a vulnerability. Vendors also issue bulletins, which is one of the big things that a lot of people use to know when there's a security vulnerability. These bulletins contain limited information. Usually they'll tell you, almost verbatim, a vulnerability exists in the XYZ program. They don't particularly go into the details of the vulnerability. They don't give details on how it's exploitable or what people are doing with it. And typically they don't give details on what they did to fix the vulnerability. They'll release a patch, you'll install it, and it's assumed you don't really care what's going on underneath the hood. And the problem with that is people really need to understand why they're fixing a vulnerability in order to feel that they understand why they're secure, why they're not insecure. Following that, we have emergency response capabilities. These are your certs, your CX, all cert first. The list goes on and on, all sorts of acronyms, usually ending with cert. They tend to be nonprofit or funded by educational groups or the government or any variety of other things. And most of all, they have limited budgets, so they tend to be reactionary in how they deal with problems. Their advisories tend to look like vendors. There's limited amount of details. They might go into what kind of vulnerability it is, but they certainly don't tell you how to exploit it. And they almost always contain full vendor information, who you need to contact, where patches are available, which is always very helpful. Security vendors. This is probably the area where Al is going to be most anxious to get involved in telling me I'm doing something wrong. You've got your internet security systems, your network associates, your SNIs, your Avalons. There's 101 different companies who are doing it now. These are your security vendors. They make scanners, they make firewalls, or they make intrusion detection systems. And the idea being is they spend money to find these vulnerabilities, they hire researchers, and they spend the time buying the software, looking at what's new, finding problems, documenting them, and using the media to get publicity for their products by being the first ones to find a vulnerability and the first ones to be able to detect this vulnerability in their software. It's also often used to gain services and things like that, or service companies. Go ahead to the next one. The security vendors will almost always work with a software vendor to a degree. They'll give time limits. They'll say, you've got a month to fix this vulnerability, and we're going to be releasing an advisory detailing what's in it. But a lot of times, Dominique, you just switched slides on me. A lot of times they'll release an advisory as soon as patches are available, and they'll give the vendor the time they need. Okay, you can go to the next one. The big thing about their advisory is they do contain more in-depth info about the vulnerability. They might detail where the buffer overrun exists, perhaps giving the command line flags and what kind of buffer needs to be put in to a command line in order to do overflow a vulnerability or a buffer overrun, or they'll detail that it's a temp file that's created under certain conditions, but they won't typically give out the exploit. They'll give patch info if it's available, and if workarounds exist that are in some cases better than the patch or are alternatives to the patch, they'll specify those as well. Do you wanna?
Yeah, sure.
Go ahead.
There's a couple things to keep in mind when you're looking at commercial response teams, or rather vendors like ISS or NAI, or one slide back. There you go. One thing that's important to note is that they have an agenda that's entirely and wholly commercial. They're different from, for instance, any first team that you deal with. While first teams are funded by the government, and in some cases take donations from the private sector, they're still somewhat nonpartisan. Security vendors are an entirely different cat altogether. One of the things to keep in mind with them is they have relationships with other vendors, some of which are very intricate and complicated. And I'll give you an example. If a very large security vendor, a multi-billion dollar one, which two of those at least are, has a relationship with Microsoft, for instance, that they've been working on because they're trying to OEM other software through Microsoft, and this is a tremendous amount of effort and labor has gone into it and money, they're not going to release a bug that'll gut Microsoft in the press, period. So what you find is that full disclosure organizations like some of those mentioned up there and many others, their hands are tied by corporate relationships. Their interest in full disclosure is entirely commercial, and philanthropism or philanthropy rather, isn't anywhere near on their agenda. What they're looking for is to make money off the bugs they find, period. If they harm a commercial relationship they have with another vendor, you'll never hear about the bug. It's quite possible they'll never even report it to FIRST. It'll just get buried. It may show up 6 months down the road when their relationship with that vendor has turned sour. It may show up in their products. You'll find a lot of that. If you grab some commercial scanners, you'll find bugs in them or vulnerabilities that you've never heard of in the press before. And what some vendors will do is the developers will put the code in anyways, with or without permission in some instances, and it'll end up actually in the hands of commercial users, but the public at large won't hear about this. And given that a lot of these products you can pull off websites, get evaluation copies, the information gets out into the wild really quickly. So at least in my opinion, commercial vendors as full disclosure vehicles are fairly useless, in as much as they don't really benefit the community. The information they do release is helpful, but the primary point is they only release information which is beneficial to them, and frequently, having dealt with a lot of vendors, a lot of bugs get squashed, probably 20 to 30% of what comes in the front door. If, for instance, we'll say ISS, because I've never worked for them, and I have for the other two, but Jeremy has, finds a bug in a really small company, they'll probably put it out, okay? But if they find one with ISS or with Microsoft, I guarantee you it will not get posted until they've dealt with Redmond. They're satisfied that Redmond's not going to cut off any other ancillary contracts they have with them, that everybody over there in Seattle's happy with the bug, have a patch for it, and it's probably 6 months after the fact. And if everything's smooth, they'll release it then. If Microsoft says, hey, listen, you post this bug, that's it. You'll never see it. And that has happened with some companies, and it continues to happen, and it will continue to happen. For all these companies, the bottom line is what's important. And that makes a great deal of sense. They've got to pay the rent too, right? So their motives are a lot different than any of the other organizations we've talked about.
Okay, you can move on to the next slide. The other player in the equation is the hacker. I won't bore you guys with going into the details. You know what's going on. They want to get your network, they want to steal your stuff, and they're a pain in the ass. Go to the next one. Hacker advisories don't happen. Next one. Okay, the next big area that we want to touch upon is the security enthusiast, also known as the full disclosure advisory. Elias, do you want to address this since you're Mr. Full Disclosure? Or do you want me to talk and you can come after me? All right. Full disclosure is basically the publishing of a security vulnerability to the security community at large. People may or may not contact the vendor with details about the vulnerability beforehand, though a good deal do tend to do that. Patches may not be available when the advisory is released or when the discussion begins, and all the details needed to exploit this vulnerability to anybody who's technically savvy enough are included, and sometimes even the exploit code to do so, which is actually at the root of a lot of people's complaints about full disclosure. Full disclosure is really embodied in mailing lists like BugTrack, a lot of the Usenet security groups, and to some degree in NTBugTrack, though a lot of people have complained in the past that bugs posted to NTBugTrack will be sanitized and even squashed in certain cases if they're too controversial. I got Dom nodding his head there. So with some hesitation, I say full disclosure there. The motive, at least in the ideal sense, is to get these problems fixed and to get them exposed to the public in a manner that everybody gets to play with it. Everybody gets to know about it. Lately, people have been doing it for publicity reasons. A lot of hacker kids have been posting bugs to BugTrack. It's like a game to get your name.
Yeah, I would say actually that's about 50-50 there.
About 50-50? Yeah, it's changed a lot. The playing field's changed a lot over the last couple of years.
It's also allowed people that have pretty good intentions, but never think twice about contacting the vendor first.
Correct. Basically what he said was there are a lot of people who have good intentions. They genuinely want the bug fixed. It just never occurs to them to contact the vendor. You know, their first knee-jerk reaction, you can go to the next one, is to contact BugTrack and pass it along through that mechanism and allow the BugTrack user base or the vendor to do the footwork needed. Full disclosure reports will contain the exact detail, often in excruciating detail, needed to recreate a vulnerability, even sometimes including an exploit. About, I'd say 50-50 again, people are posting exploits to things like BugTrack. Usually, people attempt to offer workarounds where patches don't exist. If they do exist, they do contain the information quite often. And usually it's done in more of a discussion format than a report format. One of the big thrusts behind full disclosure is learning about security, learning what's done right, learning what's done wrong, so that you can be proactive about things. Okay, do you want to speak any more on that issue?
Yes,
why don't you go back a slide, Tom?
Not a major. It's just that it's interesting to find that a lot of times, a lot of these reports that get posted, most people don't even realize what they discover. You know, they find some small vulnerabilities, say, in a TCPIP stack, and they don't have the equipment or don't have the time or don't really do enough research to figure it out, you know, that it affects more than just one OS or one machine, or that it affects, you know, instead of getting just a user account, you get a root shell, things along those lines. It's also interesting to know that a lot of these vulnerabilities actually are found by coding errors by the users, especially a lot of the fragmentation attacks. Most of the exploits were actually code that was so badly written that it broke the stack. You know, and nobody in their right sense would write code like that. So it's interesting to see the diversity of people that we have actually in this particular set. You know, you have people that do this for a living and just kind of post to listen to sign. You have people that barely know how to code to find stuff.
I think what's more, this reporting format also varies wildly. You have people who do very in-depth work when they're about to release something to Dominique, for instance. I've known Dominique a long time. Whenever he finds a vulnerability, he takes days upon days sometimes to document it, figure out what's going on, do a good description of it, and attempt to find a workaround. There are also people who will take an exploit and post it directly to the list. And it's a big source of complaints, and it really begs the question sometimes of just what the point of full disclosure is. So move along. Okay, what are the problems with each of these mechanisms? Thanks to Al, I think we've somewhat blown our flow a little bit here. But that's good. That's fine. Everybody has their good points and bad points, and that's to be understood about just about everything when it comes to security. Each has its proponents, and not everything works perfectly all the time. Move on to the next one, Dom. The problems with the security vendor-initiated bulletins, I think we touched upon briefly. They're limited in detail. They're strictly related to the OS or software published by that vendor, and it doesn't give details on what the fix was. You know, for example, a string copy was changed to verify content length prior to copy. In describing a buffer overrun, no vendor is going to give that kind of detail. They're not going to tell you what they did to fix the problem. It's fixed. Install or patch, that's all you need to know. Problems with security vendor-initiated vulnerabilities. This is what Al touched upon. They're using vulnerabilities for marketing. They genuinely want security, but they also want you to buy their product. They may sit on vulnerabilities for marketing purposes, and they may cover up vulnerabilities in their own products. This was something that I don't think Al touched upon, but a lot of these companies are involved in a variety of different software ventures, so to speak. And if a vendor discovers a flaw in their firewall, say, there's a good chance they're not going to disclose it in any kind of form at all. Okay, this is the same stuff we talked about. They'll sit on vulnerabilities for vendor relationships. The other big thing is they'll usually give vendors time, and the big problem with that is bugs tend to trickle to the surface. I can't say I 100% know how it happens, but there have been definite instances when bugs have been reported to a vendor, and during the 6 months it takes them to release a patch, it trickles out in the underground, and that could be someone finding it independently, or it could be leaked from the internal network, or who knows what it is, but it does happen. Move to the next one. They rarely release full exploits or full details, both for competitive reasons and for legal reasons. They don't want to be held liable. Response teams are slow. That's their biggest problem. They're limited in their staff and in their budgets, and they tend to report on incidents after they've taken place or vulnerabilities after they've been exposed, and that's just a function of what they are. It's not really a fault in their method. It's what they're there to do. They're meant to inform the average user that something has gone on and you need to fix it. Okay, I think I just said that. The hacker wants to bring in your network. Same old stuff you hear all the time. However, one of the big things we need to note is when hackers have vulnerabilities and you don't, they usually result in big incidences, and often the people affected don't know. The example I gave there is TTDB server D. For those of you who watched George Kurtz and Eric Schultz's talk, it was one of the vulnerabilities they used to break into a Solaris machine. That vulnerability was reported in about, October of 98, but it existed a good 6+ months in the hacker community. Thousands of machines were broken into, and to this day, I'm quite sure a large majority of them don't know what happened. Was that?
Definitely.
Full disclosure, what doesn't work about full disclosure? It gives limited time to the vendor. Telling a vendor they've got a week to fix a major vulnerability often is inadequate. Vendors have to operate by a certain set of rules. They have to, you know, write the patch, get the patch approved, test the patch, regress the patch, and, you know, usually when they're done with all those cycles, it's a good couple of weeks. When someone releases a full disclosure advisory, everyone gets the exploit if the exploit's present, or everybody gets the details needed to recreate it. The technical level among a lot of hackers is pretty high. And you've also got a lot of people who are casually interested in hacking who'll go and they'll write these exploits, and maybe they won't use them, but they may present them to the BugTrack mailing list, or they may put them up on a website, or they may give them to friends. And before you know it, it's possible for those things to get out. Though typically it's not as bad as people make it seem. The other big complaint is that it may create a larger problem where none previously existed. If a bug isn't known about in the wild and it gets posted to BugTrack, it has made a potential problem come to light perhaps sooner than it would have otherwise. Why it's good. We're big proponents of full disclosure up here, in case you haven't figured it out yet. It levels the playing ground. It makes it so everybody knows what the vulnerability is, how the vulnerability works, why it exists, and what you can do to work around it. So it definitely raises the level of understanding to the point where an administrator who keeps up with these things begins to understand where the problems lie. And maybe rather than leaving the 100+ set UID binaries that come with their Unix operating system or the sample scripts that come with an NT web server, they're going to say, you know, I remember some problems in this. I'm going to be a little proactive. I don't need this program. I don't need this program. This script is useless to me, and get rid of them, thereby becoming slightly more proactive. The other good thing is vulnerabilities are exposed quickly. It prevents the holes from being quietly exploited. I think one of the things that's probably been touched upon several times during the last 2 days is that the best hackers are the ones you don't know about, and they're using the vulnerabilities you don't know about. So it's very important to be able to learn about these things and grow from them, so to speak. It also allows for quick fixes. One of our case studies will touch upon a very blatant instance where months turned into days or hours because something was posted in a full disclosure environment, and it really seems to make a difference. Let's go to the next one. A large percentage of vulnerabilities are caught prior to them being a problem, like we touched upon. In a given week in BugTrack, 15 new vulnerabilities or so will surface. Some percentage of those are known in the underground. Some aren't known in the underground. But for the most part, sooner or later, they're going to be problems. And it's better for everybody to know about them as soon as they're going to be exploited than for people to have to wait around until something bad happens. And I think the biggest plus to full disclosure is it keeps pressure on vendors. Many people attribute the recent security thrust within a lot of vendors to things like full disclosure. They're tired of being embarrassed, and they're tired of hearing about the latest and greatest buffer overrun in a program, and are instead being proactive about things. And finally, discussion of programming flaws has led to better programming. 10 years ago, people didn't care if they were bounding buffers or overwriting stack pointers or creating temp files securely. And now, those problems are really beginning to stop being as large as they are. You don't have a dozen buffer overruns a week, you have maybe one or two. But overall, the same mistakes aren't being made. Vendors are also beginning to introduce secure versions of functions that are commonly used and commonly exploited, like SprintF, which is used to populate a buffer. In a lot of prior instances, people were able to create buffer overruns due to unbound buffers. Using SMPrintF, people are able to limit the amount of data that can be jammed in a buffer, which obviously makes it secure. Finally, vulnerabilities get the publicity they need. When a vendor quietly releases an advisory, very rarely does the press at large pick up on it, let alone the computer industry. With full disclosure, One of the big things that's been happening, especially as security and the internet have gotten a lot more popular, is major media outlets do pick it up. And you can hear about these things in the Wall Street Journal or in your Wired or ZDNets or any variety of different... Well, excuse me?
We're getting on that pager.
Or Dom's pager. Yeah, hopefully the only Dom's reading that. What do people say about full disclosure when they don't like it? And we hear these things all the time, and I'm sure Elias gets nasty hate mail every day, if not more. People say full disclosure creates, only from SPAF, create problems where they otherwise didn't exist. People tend to think that until a vulnerability is exposed, it somehow doesn't exist. I'm not really sure how that works, because as far as I can tell, the vulnerability is always there. It was in the code, it was shipped. The fact that it hasn't been made public or that people aren't exploiting it yet doesn't mean it doesn't exist. So it's not like full disclosure is creating vulnerabilities out of thin air. The other big thing is you never can assume that vulnerabilities don't exist in the wrong hands. About 2 years ago, the first IRIX from SGI, their Unix, their first buffer overrun server trickled to the surface. There were about a half dozen or so that came out in a period of about a week. And shortly thereafter, a hacking group posted to the BugTrack mailing list saying, well, now that the cat's out of the bag, here are a bunch more, and posted about another six exploits that they had claimed to have been using for approximately a year and a half prior to anybody else getting a hold of them. Never assume the hackers don't have the tools. People say full disclosure is hackers trading wares, to use some slang there. In reality, a large percentage of the people, at least on the BugTrack mailing list and participating in the Usenet forums, are security professionals or administrators who are involved with security, and they genuinely want to help the situation. If nothing else, they want to share the information they've found with other administrators so they don't get bitten the way they did. Go ahead on. Working with vendors is the quickest way to get things done. I haven't heard that one very many times, actually. Vendors have to be slow, like we mentioned. They've got release cycles, they've got testing, they've got regression. They want to wait for the next version so that you have to buy it because of an upgrade. 101 different reasons they do it. It's the way it is for them, I guess. And they usually try to limit the disclosure of a bug. If you find a vulnerability, report to the vendor. They may patch it, and they may sneak it into the latest and greatest libc patch or service pack and not tell you what it is, and not tell you that they're doing it even, and just assume that you're grateful. Administrators can't keep up. It's true. Administrators aren't lazy. They've got a lot of work. But one of the big things that full disclosure, I feel at least, is it gives them an opportunity to take the bug for what it's worth, read it, understand it to the degree that they can, and be able to make an educated decision on what kind of risk it poses to their data. They're able to say, I don't have time to fix this bug. I understand how it works. It's going to affect our mail servers. But because those are blocked by a firewall, I'm not too concerned. Or it might be the thing that gives them the impetus to go and take the time to install a service pack because there's something that's going to affect their day-to-day and it's something that's critical to their infrastructure. Oh, you went twice again. We're going to go through some case studies. Going through vendors, going through a security vendor like an NAI or an ISS. Did you go to the next one? A real full disclosure type thing, and what response teams have done, really just a short example of how slow they are, for lack of a better way to put it. Through vendors, this is actually one that I found myself. In April of 98, I found some vulnerabilities in Sun's SNMP server, a ship with Solaris 2.6. Basically, the problem was they had hard-coded in a default community that had full read-write access to their management information bases. And due to the way that they had written some extensions to allow Sun-specific things to be done, they introduced vulnerabilities that would allow a remote user and local users to gain root access to the machine. Fairly complex attack, but it existed. So what I did was I contacted Sun and went through the proper channels. The place I was working at the time wasn't in the business of doing these security vendor disclosures, so I figured the best way for me to be responsible was to go to the vendor. It was a responsible thing to do. So in talking to Sun, we agreed that I wouldn't publicize them, and that they would fix it in Solaris 7 and issue patches at some point. We sort of left it open-ended. Can you move along? So what worked with that? The vulnerability has never been exploited in the wild, to my knowledge. There are people now who understand it because of the patches. It's a little more complicated than that, but eventually this vulnerability was released by Internet Security Systems as an advisory, which is probably a good example of how things leak out. But a patch wasn't available until October for this vulnerability. Patches were issued, so that worked. What didn't work, the fix took 4 months. Sun attempted to quietly fix it, and unfortunately they got caught doing so. The actual patch they put out was insufficient. So anybody who's installed the patch or is running Solaris 7, the patch they put out fixes certain circumstances but doesn't address the full problem. And I think that's a big flaw in that there was no discussion about the vulnerability in public, so people weren't able to poke around with it. Right along. We'll skip this one since we seem to have been limited with time because of things running over. Go to the next one.
We started late, too.
We did start late, but I don't want to perpetuate it. Via security vendor. I may let Al address this one since he was actually responsible for getting this one out.
Which one?
This is the NTS and MP agent stuff.
Well,
you mean to go ahead? All right. This is actually another vulnerability that myself and Dominique, who's operating my laptop, found in, or actually it was me, in January 98. Hey, if he's willing to let me take pure credit, that's great. We immediately reported to Microsoft. We gave them full details. We told them exactly what was wrong, how it worked, what they needed to do to fix it. They told us they were going to begin to address the problem right away, and it would be in Service Pack 4. This was in January. Little did we all know that it was going to take another approximately 9 months to get it out. In October of 98, this is probably another good example of things leaking out, Network Associates released an advisory on the same problem, or a similar set of the problems, which were independently found by Tim Newsham. And shortly thereafter, Service Pack 4 was available, which fixed the problem. Go to the next one, Dom. So what worked? Patch was issued prior to widespread problems. I think myself, Dominique, maybe Al and Tim, and a few other people had a grasp of what the impact of this was. Portions of it had actually been discussed on NT BugTrack prior to reporting to Microsoft. But a patch was issued before anybody was busy using it in the wild. But what didn't work was the SP4 default setting for SNMP still allowed for problems. They had read-write communities that were enabled by default, and unless you were savvy enough to know to go turn this off, it was still a problem. And this SNMP fix was not publicized, and the bug was, to some degrees, inadequately publicized. And it took 9 months. The latest example of full disclosure that seems to have gotten a lot of publicity is the recent IIS buffer overflow, which was released by a small, I think they're a company, called EI. It was actually a very interesting vulnerability. I don't want to belittle it in any way at all. But it was released in less of a security vendor manner and more of a full disclosure manner. Basically, they discovered a buffer overrun and were capable of exploiting it. They gave Microsoft 1 week notice prior to, they told Microsoft, we're going to release this in 1 week. You're shaking your head no. Oh, okay. They gave Microsoft 1 week notice on this vulnerability and said, you've got a week, start a patch, and we're going to release, and we're going to give out the exploit, which they did. They were giving a workaround, which by some indications worked somewhat effectively. But the funny thing that happened was an official patch and hotfix was available within a couple days.
24.
Within 24 hours even. So why don't you move to the next one? So what worked? Well, the vulnerability got a lot of media coverage. ZDNet picked up on it. Associated Press picked up on it. Forbes, Wired. Lots of articles about full disclosure and why they did what they did and what they were hoping to accomplish. So patches were made very quickly available. What didn't work is what a lot of people bring up. When a vulnerability is not widely known and you release it to the public at large, does it create a bigger problem or does it actually introduce a problem? In this case, it's possible machines were compromised. Apparently a handful were affected by this bug and were compromised or defaced. But very few compared to what the doomsayers would have you think. response teams don't find new vulnerabilities. They're not supposed to. Fortunately, the days of the 6 month, we give a good example at the bottom. But once upon a time, 6 months was your average response team advisory for a vulnerability, be it one that was put out to BugTrack or one that was put out by a vendor. They don't issue advisories until there's a patch, or at least until the vendor says go ahead. Our good example there is RDIST, which is a program used to distribute files across multiple machines using, I believe, RSH. Is that correct?
RSH.
Yeah. There was a vulnerability that was known about in the underground in 1994, and CERT finally picked up on it in 97. Would you like to tell that story? All right.
This is interesting because the RDIST bug was on a full disclosure mailing list, but it was a private full disclosure mailing list that was comprised of some of the speakers that were here today that I'm sure a lot of people sat and talked with. And the idea was limited full disclosure. So they distributed this exploit that was written by a very popular computer security figure, writes lots of books. And
would you say hauls in lots of criminals?
Yeah, hauls in lots of criminals. Bit of a superhero. And he'd written this and posted it to the InfoHacks mailing list. The downside to this was it was Zardoz and InfoHacks, actually. Both of these mailing lists were frequented by hackers because they were in the machines of most of the folks that were reading the mail. That being said, a lot of people in the first community knew about the problems, were intimately aware of them. They were having them reported to them for a four-year period. And in 1997, finally posted an advisory about it after God knows how many computers were violated by it. And I'm not sure what the impetus finally was to post, but it points out two things. One is that some first agencies are notoriously slow, in this instance CERT, but they're not always. They're very overworked. They had the whole internet to rely on them at that point for incident response, which is a pretty heavy burden. And also, it shows that limited full disclosure to certain parties is almost useless. Another example was the IIS advisory from IIS. That went out. Somebody actually posted the exploit details for the HTR one a couple days ago, the extension one.
By the Chinese,
Chinese double byte vulnerability, where Microsoft posted advisory without giving actually the details and only supplied the details to a consortium of IDS vendors. And we received an anonymous tip actually with all the details for the vulnerability within 2 days of that advisory going out. So it's obvious that either people are reading somebody else's email, or maybe you have some employees that are not as trustworthy as you think they are.
Okay. What are the effects of full disclosure? What good things has it done? We have vendors who are very proud about how proactive they're being. Recently, there was a buffer overrun that was posted to BugTrack that someone had notified Sun about. And someone had said something to them about how they should have notified Sun and given them some time. And they returned a message that had been sent to them by the head of Sun Security, or Sun Development Security, that said something to the effect of, hey, we fixed it in Solaris 7. Let's hear it for proactive bug fixing. And that really, I think, illustrates a problem to some degree in that, yeah, they fixed it and they knew it existed, but they didn't issue patches for it. It's a good example of when that happens. But Sun has fixed numerous bugs in Solaris 7. By some indications, they hired a summer intern whose sole job was to go replace all SprintFs with SNPrintFs and various things like that. Microsoft has really taken a good step forward, finally, in fixing a lot of their network security model flaws with NT5, fingers crossed, or Windows 2000, or whatever it's called at this point. They've gone and replaced a large portion of their security model on the network. And it looks like what they're doing is probably going to fix a lot of the outstanding problems they've had, null sessions, the equivalency of hashes on the wire, the passing of the LAMMAN hash for compatibility with Windows 95 and Windows for workgroups, which I believe, again, George and Eric probably touched upon in their talk. Response teams are getting quicker. We've seen CERT actually put out an advisory against a bug within a couple weeks, which is a big step forward for them. And OSs are getting more secure, kind of, sort of. The idea being they're trying to be proactive. They're not being forthright with their problems when they're finding them, but they're genuinely trying now, whereas once upon a time, security never entered into the equation. Let's go to the next one. So what have we learned? Well, this is what I've learned, at least. Vendors tend to be slow. It's the way they work. But when someone's holding a match underneath them or a vulnerability is out in public and being exploited, they tend to act pretty quickly. That Microsoft was able to issue a patch within 24 hours for a bug that probably would have taken them normally about 9 months to patch definitely says something about full disclosure. Hackers have the exploits. I think Al's story is a perfect example of bugs do float around, and they can take a long time to get out, especially when they're not disclosed in a very public manner. Yep.
Just a quick note that is actually pretty interesting. Fairly common to get an email after an exploit has been released to the list of vulnerability of somebody claiming, screaming mad too, that he, you know, it was his exploit and he had found it, you know, 6 months ago, and therefore he was not going to get credit because somebody else has already posted it. So it's obvious that a lot of people are finding the same vulnerability all over the place. So the exploits are out there. So just because you don't hear them as being exploited, don't believe they're not, actually.
Okay. Ignorance is not bliss when it comes to security. This is pretty obvious. It's better to know you have a problem and know you can't fix it, because at least then you can do some risk assessment and management. When you don't know about it, you get broken into, and then you're dealing with the shattered remains of your network. It's better to know and have a workaround than to not know it all. That's really what's to be learned from that. Go to the next one. What can you do? This is the kind of stuff we're probably most interested in conveying to you, I'd say. There are mailing lists that discuss full disclosure and vulnerabilities and whatnot. The granddaddy of all full disclosure mailing lists is BugTrack, which was created originally in 1993 as a mechanism for getting these vulnerabilities out there. I think a lot of the original people had seen what the underground had and had seen what was going on and was doing the post-mortem on these machines, and decided that rather than everybody having the same problems, they would make sure everybody knew about them. Because if everybody knew about them, at least then maybe you could better analyze what was going on. BugTrack covers all varieties of operating systems. There's the address to go to for BugTrack and a whole lot more. Next, we have NT BugTrack. As we mentioned, I call it pretty much full disclosure because its moderator has a habit of squashing things, for lack of a better way to put it. It covers only Microsoft NT OS and apps, other things like Unix, hardware problems, and even NT hit BugTrack as well. There's the NT BugTrack. Go to the next one, Dom. What to do? Incidents mailing list. This is actually one I'm pretty excited about. It's a mailing list to cover breaking threats and incidences. It also just happens to be one that we're running. One of the recent things that did occur on the list that I thought was interesting is it was the first notification of a lot of these cache corruption problems that have been floating around. Network Solutions recently had their authority taken away from them by somebody who had compromised one of the root servers, and the incidents mailing list was the first place that I saw any discussion of this, and actually people discussing where it was coming from and who was to blame and what they were going to do about it. So that worked really well. InfoSec Security News, it's a great mailing list. It covers security-related news and articles from a variety of different perspectives, both in the commercial press and your underground. Oh, and it's yes.
Security org is no longer. The list will be back up in a few days under a bigger and better server.
Okay. So should we direct people to attrition for now? Okay. InfoSec Security News will also be moving to Security Focus. It's funny that. What to do? Summary lists. This is me being even-handed now. ISS has a list that goes out every 2 weeks that summarizes what's going on in the underground, or what's going on in full disclosure, what's going on the underground, what the latest and greatest threats are. There's their URL. Microsoft has their advisory mechanism. Every vendor has an advisory mechanism. To give a Security Focus another plug, we have a big list of all those addresses. So if you need to check them out, that's probably a good place to get them all in one place. The next one. What do we learn? Vendors hush security issues. Security vendor advisories work but have some limitations associated with them. Again, there's potential for bias. And full disclosure, if nothing else, is the best way to keep abreast of what's going on prior to it really becoming an issue. People are posting these lists, and they're being pretty effective, and if you want to keep up, you really got to pay attention to what's going on. I think this is our last slide. Great questions. What was that? That's lights. No. I said questions. So we're done with the slides. We wanted to open it up to questions. There's not a lot of you here, but I again like to thank all of you for coming. I know it's late, and I know you're all hungry. All right. Okay.
How long did they give you?
Pardon?
How long did they give you? But how long did they give? When from the fact from the point where you release a patch to when they told you about it, how long was that? Could it have been a communication breakdown? Because at least they claim that they tried repeatedly to communicate with Microsoft without any response. I would actually invite you and everybody else at Microsoft, because obviously, as you say, I mean, we only have heard mostly their side of the story. So it would have been nice to at least get some comment from you to the list and state in your side, because obviously there's no way we're going to learn what is the appropriate procedure to contact vendors without them letting us know as well.
I think. Okay, at the risk of turning this into a religious war, this is not the forum for it.
Let's keep it polite, guys.
No, but I think.
Yeah. Okay. I think that it's important to note that just before we go any further, that a lot of people don't understand. There's no universal charter for how much time you give a vendor. And if the BugTrack mailing list actually has a charter for it, very few people read it. But you have to give them a reasonable amount of time. And I think they're probably great guys. But that being said, a vendor that has millions of machines deployed has a responsibility to their end users, to legal responsibilities aside from just moral ones, to make sure that the patches they released are well done and that they're regression tested properly. I mean, you know, life support systems depend on the software, et cetera, but whether it be Solaris, AIX, or Microsoft, NT, or Windows, whatever, it's important for them to have some time. Typically 2 or 3 months is reasonable. Unless the problem is being exploited in the wild, people have to give them some liberty. A lot of people push that really hard, and unfortunately post probably before they need to. But there should be some consideration given to vendors. If you're getting stonewall, it's a different story, and a lot of vendors do stonewall. But that being said, you should be somewhat reasonable about the posts you make. Any more questions on here? Just a second, this gentleman has said them.
In your analysis, do you have any comparison between open source or free software versus proprietary closed source?
We have no actual statistics. That being said, I think that if you follow any CS like ComSecurity Unix and or BugTrack, it's very clear that free source operating systems come out with their patches same day usually. They're incredibly fast compared to commercial vendors. The reason for that being, again, there's a lot of reasons for it, but one is free operating systems are not also legally required to go through a series of steps when creating software revisions. And that being said, they have a busy community. They work real fast. That's good stuff.
That doesn't say anything about the quality of the software to begin with, though.
That's true.
If you look at the number of vulnerabilities that come out between open source and closed source operating systems, there's definitely a large scale difference.
There is. It's huge.
That is also comes into that's a factor also, being that the source code is available for you to analyze.
Right. Well, I mean, the source code is available, period, whether it's free source or not. The question is how many people have access to it. But that's a whole different discussion, I think, altogether.
Yeah. I'm curious what role the government agencies play in this, because obviously they have people that are looking for these vulnerabilities, but they can't really talk.
There's a lot of government agencies. Which one are you talking about? Like in general intelligence or?
Let's say the intelligence sorts of NSA.
I think the question is, do they want that vulnerability fixed?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Probably not.
It's just a question. Are they, do they participate in these full disclosures?
Yeah. The answer to that is no, so far as I know. I've never in my life heard of it.
Of NSA?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. When's the last time you read anything about the NSA in the public? I mean, they're a little quiet, given what they do. But, yeah, I think the answer to that is no. Sorry.
Given your experience with the response to the SNMP bugs that you just covered, how would you proceed differently if you found an equivalent bug today? How would you have gone about it?
SNMP? That would be Jeremy, yeah.
You know, to some degree, I'm not entirely convinced that I would not go to a vendor initially. I think giving the vendor sufficient notice and giving them a reasonable amount of time to fix a problem is warranted. Using the Sun vulnerabilities as an example, the actual problem was that they had hard-coded this community into the system. If they removed that mechanism, it would have made the vulnerabilities a lot harder to exploit. Okay, the fact that they had left this in was the problem. So making a patch for essentially commenting out a line of code isn't very difficult. So I would say that giving them, say, a month, you know, giving them what they feel is the needed time for patching all the different revisions, regressing it, being reasonable about it, you know, giving them what they need, letting them fix it, and then releasing an advisory, be it full disclosure or a security vendor style advisory, detailing the problem, giving some insight into it, and hoping that the vendor takes the threats, I guess, to heart and really does attempt to do it within a reasonable amount of time. Like I said, 4 months is not really a reasonable amount of time for a one-line change.
What else?
Yeah, Dominique? I've got 5 minutes. All right.
When releasing vendor advisories, do you ever track how long it took before you saw the vulnerabilities you found, reverse engineered into exploits, and then available in a while?
I can give you an example of where I actually did reverse engineer a vendor patch. About, I guess, a year and a half ago, Sun released a very cryptic advisory about a vulnerability in the Vol RM mount program, a cryptic program that nobody really knew what it did anyhow. And within about an hour of the release of this advisory, myself and a friend had ripped through the patch, determined what they changed, determined just what the vulnerability was, and written a full exploit for it. It wasn't difficult. It wasn't a particularly difficult bug, though it was actually of a variety I'd never seen before. Buffer overruns, with all the cookie cutter buffer overruns that go on now, we're probably talking hours.
It's usually a day.
Within a day, yeah. Or before it doesn't hit bug track?
Depends on who also posts the advisory as well. All of the SNI advisories that I was involved with releasing were so technically detailed that it didn't take a lot of work to write an advisory, or an exploit rather. Just depends. That being said, we don't want to paint out every vendor as this looming evil creature that just stonewalls you, forgets about your bugs, and all I want is your money. There are some that behave like that at times, but I think what it comes down to at the end of the day, in most cases, people that I've dealt with, it's persons and personalities over at these companies. They reflect how quickly things get fixed frequently and how much power they have inside as a mandate.
Well, another thing is I think vendors have begun to work with the full disclosure community rather than against them. And that definitely contributes to quicker turnarounds.
Makes a big difference. And don't always assume the guy you're sending mail to has the authority to fix anything, because frequently they don't.
Is this a follow? Is that a follow-up?
Actually, it's a follow-up to what you just said.
Okay, go ahead.
Is in working with Microsoft on a vulnerability we found recently. They were much faster.
That's great.
Yeah, I would say within the last year, a majority of the vendors have gotten a lot better about these things, and they genuinely seem to be. I hesitate to say, but thankful that you're coming to them and that you're going to make these vulnerabilities public and you're going to give them the time to address them.
You can see this in the public. For instance, some employees from Microsoft have posted a mailing list recently. 6 months ago, you didn't see that, or it was extremely rare.
I think it's important for the vendors and the security people to feel like they're working together rather than against each other. And I think that's going on now, which is good.
Just one more front of you. What do you got, bud?
Have you ever seen a vendor on the threat of regression testing? Take several months to test for previous versions, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
But why can't a vendor release a temporary patch with a disclaimer saying install at your own risk while they work on a better lower regression test?
Wow.
Well, no, I think there's definitely. I would think, obviously you have the due diligence and the responsibility on the vendor's part. But I think a good example was given that if you release a shabby patch, people learn how to work around it pretty quickly. And once it's been worked, that's embarrassing.
The liability issues are absolutely enormous. Like, they could sink a company.
But occasionally, there are still companies who will release patches for certain versions of the operating system, but not others. A good example, there was a number of exploits posted recently to BugTrack regarding an overrun in the locale features of Solaris and AIX. Was that?
Next question.
Okay. The interesting thing is they released a patch for 2.6. But there's no patch for Solaris 7 available yet. It may have come available in the last couple of days since I've been away from my computer. But I was a little distraught to discover that it wasn't fixed or fixable.
You got a question?
So it seems that the current people in power and government are trying to put more and more laws in place and getting more money from Mecca and other companies to
to reverse engineer.
To reverse engineer, right.
And if this is true, then what can we do to thwart that activity?
Post anonymously a bug track, people do every day.
Yeah, full disclosure is a good way to make sure that, people find out about it. And in the case that you're concerned about getting in trouble, anonymous remailers are available.
If WIPO and other laws like it become a reality, it's going to be one of the most regrettable turns of computer security that we could be dealt. What you're going to see is the underground really going underground, and you're not going to hear about it. If BugTrack gets sued by 34 different government organizations or charged, criminal charged, we're not going to exist anymore. And if we don't exist, and there's or an anti-BugTrack or some other public medium doesn't exist, the bugs are still going to keep happening, and hackers aren't going away. If you have any, if there's any question in your mind whether they're well organized, go to DEF CON tomorrow.
Well, they're not well organized, but there are a lot of them.
They communicate.
Yeah, they get on real well.
No, but what can we do to make sure that that doesn't happen?
Lobby. I mean, write your congressman or senator.
Well, I think the other big thing is one of the federal courts recently upheld that or overturned a decision that source code wasn't protected speech. I think there was a decision recently that said that, yeah, you have the right to publish.
Yeah, but it doesn't really fall under reverse engineering law.
Do we have to shut it down right now?
This is true. How are we doing? If you guys have additional questions, we can keep on going. I have no problem with that.
Hey, Mike, give it to him.
Bill Cheswick will be presenting a close-up talk in about 10 minutes, so feel free to hang out here and go on. I'm not going to shut this room down until this comes to a natural end, but... There's a close-up in conference room A upstairs. So, yeah, so that'll be final one. And also, we can bring this up into a personal offline conversation. So, you know, go ahead.
Any other questions before we shut down?
Thank you very much.